This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Rudolph Giuliani, the controversial mayor of New York, was being closely watched by political reporters around the country when he was running for the U.S. Senate opposite Hillary Clinton. But he dropped out of the race in the spring, announcing that he had prostate cancer and that he was separating from his wife. My guest, Wayne Barrett, has written a new investigative biography of him. Barrett is senior editor at The Village Voice and has covered Giuliani for over 20 years. Giuliani is a former federal prosecutor who made his name going after the mafia and white-collar criminals. He was the hero of Barrett's 1989 book, City for Sale. But Giuliani isn't depicted as a hero in the new biography. Barrett portrays him as a politician who steals credit for successes he isn't responsible for and dodges blame for problems he helped create. I asked Barrett when his opinion of Giuliani changed.
I would say that, there were some changes in both campaigns when he ran in 89 and 93. I thought particularly he ran to the right when he ran in 93 against the then incumbent mayor, David Dinkins. And I was troubled by many of the racial aspects of the 1993 campaign. But really, I think the point at which Rudy changed in a fundamental way was after he endorsed Mario Cuomo in 94, George Pataki won, Newt Gingrich won control of the Congress, the rise of the right within his own party, with him having made this misstep endorsing this liberal Democratic governor. And it was at that point in late 94 and in early 95 that we saw an enormous ideological shift on Giuliani's part. I think it continues to this day. But that would be the point at which I felt that he had changed his politics in such a fundamental way, and his welfare policies and many of his anti-poor policies and anti-black policies began to be very much a prominent part of his administration.
Did you feel like he underwent this ideological change to ingratiate himself to the Republicans who he had alienated by supporting the Democrat Mario Cuomo, or did you feel it was a genuine political change that he underwent?
I don't think any of his political ideology is genuine. This is a man who became a registered Republican to get a job in the Reagan administration when he was appointed Associate Attorney General. He is extraordinarily flexible and non-ideological. As a person, that's the way I've known him. I think that's the way I write about him. He adapted to what he saw as the change within the country and within the party, and he did an abrupt 180-degree turn. He can do that on a dime.
Now, you say that there's little question that New York City became a better place to live on Giuliani's watch. What improved in New York?
Well, certainly we have safer streets. Certainly we have cleaner streets. I point out particularly the sanitation department, I think, was the strongest department of his administration in the early years and dramatically improved productivity on the streets of New York. He has somewhat of an overblown reputation, which I think he has hyped on the crime front, but there's no question but that crime has been reduced here, as it has been reduced in most major cities in the country, and to a certain degree, just by his appointment of Bill Bratton, the police commissioner of the first 2 years of his administration, he certainly should get credit for appointing Bratton, who did a number of things that did have some impact.
Now, you think that Giuliani took credit for many things that he wasn't responsible for. One big example is the renovation of Times Square. Times Square has gone from a kind of, you know, seedy block to now it's got like the Disney stores and other mega stores, big tourist attraction now. In what way do you think he took credit for something that he wasn't responsible for?
Well, you know, he's the first mayor to ever push the button on New Year's Eve. Mayors didn't do that. He insinuated himself into that spot very early in his administration. And I think he kind of merged, particularly when he pushed the button on a new millennium. There's every year when that happens, there are news stories about the resurgence of Times Square. And every year he has identified himself in the public consciousness with that resurgence. In fact, if you cite the Disney deal, for an example, which I think was a pivotal deal, that was all negotiated by the Dinkins administration. In fact, crime went down 27% in Times Square in the final year of the Dinkins administration. Street cleanliness improved dramatically in the final year of the Dinkins administration in Times Square. So even if you look at porn shops, where he did introduce legislation which ultimately passed, was tested in the courts, to try to reduce the number of porn shops in the Times Square area, by the time that law went into effect, the number of porn shops had already declined from 140 to 21. What produced the decline was the condemnation of those properties by the state and the city, and that was put together really under the Koch and Cuomo administrations. And this irony was that I decided to write this as the opening chapter, thinking that this would be a balanced chapter, that I would have pluses and minuses, that I would have things that I could say, well, this Rudy did this, and this is, I thought it was a metaphor for his government. It turned out it was a metaphor for taking credit, which he is an expert at doing, for things he had virtually nothing to do with.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Wayne Barrett. He's the author of the new book, Rudy, an investigative biography of Rudolph Giuliani. And Wayne Barrett is senior editor at The Village Voice, where he's been covering politics for 22 years. Rudolph Giuliani takes some of the credit for crime having dropped in New York during the years that he's been mayor. What are some of the statistics, and how much of the credit do you think Giuliani deserves for that?
Well, you know, I quote Mike Julian, who was a very high-level police commander under both Dinkins and Giuliani. And he tells the tale about how, if you asked the average New Yorker what were the five things that Rudy Giuliani did, one of them would be he got rid of the squeegees. The squeegees were the guys that washed your windshield when you didn't want them to wash your windshield, and seemed to intimidate some drivers in the process of doing it at many street corners, pivotal street corners, well-trafficked street corners, rather, in New York. And it turns out, Mike Julian says, we got rid of every squeegee before Rudy Giuliani took office, and that he saw Rudy Giuliani give a speech in which he laid claim to this, and Christine Latigano was press secretary, Rudy's press secretary, was there. So Julian goes up and explains to Christine, shows her the numbers, talks with her about this, is assured that he won't do this again. Of course, he's continued to do it. I cite that as sort of an example. Now, the thing that propelled Giuliani's election in 1993 more than any other factor was what the widespread perception that the murder rate had soared under David Dinkins, soared and topped 2,000 for the first time in the history of the city. There was no question but that there were more than 2,000 murders a year in the first two Dinkins years, and that the murder rate was very high. But the fact is that the murder rate had been artificially lowered in the years prior to David Dinkins taking office. There was no great upsurge in the murder rate in the Dinkins years, and there was the perception of that upsurge was key to Giuliani's election. He had nothing to do with the manipulation of the figures prior to taking office, but what actually happened was that during the Koch administration, and even going back to the Beam administration and even to the Lindsay administration, the number of undetermined external deaths was allowed to grow dramatically in New York, atypical of anywhere around the country. And these are deaths where the medical examiner cannot determine if they're homicide or if they're an accident. And that number grew to 720 in the final year of the Koch administration. It actually averaged throughout the 80s somewhere between 700 and 800. This was a figure that created the possibility of diluting the murder rate because when Charles Hirsch, the new medical examiner, took office in 1989, he instituted new policies, hired 28 new assistant medical examiners, and they dramatically, in Dinkins's first year, reduced the number of undetermined external deaths, and this resulted in a dramatic increase in the number of murders. That's why everyone believed throughout the Dinkins administration that we suddenly had a dramatic turn in the murder rate.
Although the crime statistics look improved under the Giuliani administration. There were some really horrible police brutality cases that became big national stories. For example, Amadou Diallo, a West African man, took 19 bullets from four cops while he reached for his wallet, which the cops thought might be a gun. Abner Louima, a Haitian man, was sodomized with a stick in a police precinct. Anthony Baez, a Puerto Rican man, was choked to death by a cop. A few weeks ago, women were attacked in New York by groups of men in Central Park, and cops stood by as the women screamed for help. What do you think Giuliani's reaction to these police brutality cases have been? The last case wasn't a brutality case. It was a standing by case.
Well, he's other than in the Abner Louima case, which occurred when he was running for re-election in 1997, when he acted promptly to suspend the police officers that were involved, and he took dramatic steps. Those are the kinds of steps he should have done in many other instances, but he clearly did this for political purposes because that case occurred really close to the election in 1997. He appointed a task force, and then after he was reelected, he derided the task force's findings, and I think that really exposed just how political his actions were in 1997. But he did appear to deal with that case promptly and appropriately. In every other instance, he has been abysmal in the handling of these cases. I find the two cases that disturb me the most are two young men who were not killed, Michael Jones and Dante Johnson, one in Brooklyn and one in the Bronx, both 16 years old, lying in critical condition in their hospital beds when he went public and derided their parents for letting them be out. One was out at 2 o'clock in the morning and one was out at 12:30 at night, and said, what kind of parents are they to let their kids be out at night? These were kids who were not in any way involved in any criminal activity. The police shootings of them were clearly mistakes. And instead of expressing some sympathy for either the young man or their families, he attacked their families while they sat in critical condition. This is the kind of things that he has done that I think have poisoned in a way that's unprecedented in the city, the relationship that he has as mayor with the black community.
My guest is Wayne Barrett, author of a new biography of New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Wayne Barrett, author of a new investigative biography of New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. Politicians are always trying to place pressure on their opponents' vulnerabilities. Rudy Giuliani commissioned a vulnerability study about himself so that he and his aides could examine all of Giuliani's weaknesses and then figure out how to defend himself against attacks on those weaknesses. You managed to get access to this vulnerability study that Giuliani commissioned in 1993 during his mayoral run. What was in the study?
Well, it's about 5 inches thick. Mm. And two researchers did it and worked on it for many months. The study reviews Rudy's entire public and his public career and personal life prior to 1993. The study is published in April of 93. And Rudy Giuliani believed that he had had all copies of it destroyed. The day he received it, he sent an aide to the desk of the two research assistants, and the aide killed it on the hard drive of both of their computers, took the disks, and confiscated what he thought were the only four copies that were made of it. Though the theory of a vulnerability study is you look at the weaknesses and then you come up with strategies to counteract it, and certainly the vulnerability study had strategies that it recommended to counteract all of the weaknesses and vulnerabilities that it described. None of those strategies were ever implemented or discussed because Rudy was so upset about the tenor of the report itself that he just wanted a deep sixth. But just to give you an example, there are sections in there about his ruthlessness. There are sections, if you remember, that he spearheaded a rally of police officers outside of City Hall at the time of the Dinkins administration that turned into a riot with cops overturning everything. And Giuliani spoke there, and he used expletives several times to denounce Dinkins. And he was roundly condemned for that, but never was he condemned more for it than in his own vulnerability study. The chapter is called The Human Scream Machine, a description of the mayor himself by his own research director. So that's the kind of thing it exposed. It also looked into things on his personal life. For example, his first marriage to his second cousin, Regina Perugi, is described as evidence of a weirdness factor in his personal life. And then it discusses his, quotes, raucous social life, seeing other women during his first marriage.
Giuliani dropped out of the Senate race running against Hillary Clinton, saying that he had prostate cancer and that he was separating from his wife. But it turned out he hadn't told his wife that yet. Then his wife, Donna Hanover, held a press conference of her own in which she announced that she hadn't been part of his public life for several years because of another woman who turned out to be his former press secretary. Did she know about the affair that he was having at that time with the woman he's still with, Judith Nathan?
She apparently learned about that very late. That's at least what she says. I really can't get into her head, but she has said that she learned about that very late. You know, he brought her to the Inner Circle. The Inner Circle is this annual event that all of the press corps in New York, it's a stage show. The reporters perform, and then Rudy performs. And it's one of those big tux nights with everybody in the elite is there. And he brought her there and had her there at the table. And apparently, sometime after that, Donna Hanover learned about the relationship between Judith Nathan and Rudy.
The line between public and private life now for elected politicians and people running for office is so fuzzy now. I'm wondering if you had been reporting on Rudolph Giuliani's private life, if you had inside information about Judith Nathan or about the woman who had been his lover before that, who was a member of his administration, if you knew about it and if you thought you should write about it or not.
It's a very complex question. I think it's different for a reporter than it is for a biographer. I'm a biographer wearing that hat today.
Yeah.
And certainly I think someone's private life, I think we expect to read some things about that in a biography, and I think it would be ridiculous to suggest that someone's romantic life was irrelevant to a biography. But on the other hand, I knew about Judith Nathan. I learned about her, in November of 1999, and the New York Post did a story maybe 2 or 3 months ago. It was a front-page story in a Saturday Post saying that the reason why Rudy revealed the relationship with Judith Nathan was that he knew I knew about her. I have no idea. They cited blind City Hall sources as saying this. I have no idea if that's the case. It certainly is true that I knew about her. I had not yet made up my mind to write about her. I was saving it for one of the final issues to deal with. Once he publicly announced it, I think it resolved all question, really, as to whether or not to write about it. Now, on the other hand, the relationship with Christine Latigano, I have absolutely no question in my mind that that is totally within the public purview. She became the second most powerful person in his government. She was a 28-year-old kid when she went to work for him. She had no governmental experience. And to have that kind of a relationship with a person that is raised to that level within your government who gets raises all the way up. She even got a $9,000 raise while she was on leave. And in the end, she was making over $141,000 as his communications director. And then his administration helped appoint her to her current position as the head of the tourist bureau. I have no question but that that is a totally legitimate story. There's no zone of privacy as far as I'm concerned. For the Latigano matter, the Nathan matter, I think she has nothing to do with his government. She's a personal friend of his. If he hadn't announced it, I think it's a very close call as to whether or not that's a legitimate story.
My guest is Wayne Barrett. He's the author of a new investigative biography of New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Wayne Barrett, author of an investigative biography of New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. You investigated the lives of some of Giuliani's family members, including Giuliani's father, who you say was an enforcer for a loan shark. And the loan, how is the loan shark connected to Giuliani?
The loan shark is Rudy's uncle, Leo DeVanzo. He's Helen Giuliani's brother. Helen is his mother.
And Giuliani's father also did time in Sing Sing for
armed robbery. He was also convicted of burglary at the age of 15. He was convicted of armed robbery at the age of 26.
What's the relevance of that information to Giuliani's career?
Well, I've never seen a politician in my life invoke his father more often than Rudy has. He's constantly talking about his father. And just a couple of months ago, he said he wouldn't be mayor were it not for Harold Giuliani. Harold Giuliani had a very important influence on his life. And again, I've never seen a biography that didn't look into the family roots of an individual, the individual that was being written about. And so I certainly think that Harold Giuliani is an enormously important character, and what he did and the fact that he did it all through Rudy's young life. He was working in this this mob bar. He was an enforcer and a loan shark and a gambling operation. That's what put the bread on Rudy's table. And cousins younger than Rudy knew that the bar was that kind of operation. They told me that on the record. I quote one cousin who's several years younger than Rudy is saying that Uncle Leo was mafiosa. And, you know, there's a mafia wing to the family. Rudy has unimpeachable credentials as a mafia fighter. I don't think it says anything about that. In fact, maybe this experience helped drive him, but there's certainly no question in my mind that this criminal history, Rudy has absolutely no empathy, no sympathy for anybody who comes into contact with the criminal justice system, apparently except members of his own family. He treats fare beaters as scoundrels, and I think that's really one of the interesting insights in him. You would think that this personal history, this family history that he's had, would open him to the idea that life is a little more complex than that. He's still saying, Rudy is, that his father was the most honest man he ever knew. Well, if his father was the most honest man he ever knew when he did a year and a half in Sing Sing, maybe that should be instructive to Rudy about the complexity of life, that there's a few grays in there. It's not all black and white. Instead, he's had precisely the opposite attitude. So I think there are many ways in which it's very relevant. Rudy obviously has transcended the cesspool that some members of his family lived in, and he has been an enormously effective prosecutor of the mob.
Mm-hmm. Now, Giuliani also had five uncles who were cops, and that might have influenced his thinking, too.
He had one uncle that was a cop very briefly, but four who were cops for most of their adult lives. Mm-hmm. One of those cops was also involved with the bar. In fact, the bar was in the name of one of the uncles who was a cop, and this uncle who was a cop was also busted on gambling-related charges. So, but the rest of the cops in the family were very outstanding individuals, as best as I could determine, and he had four cousins who were cops, one of whom was killed in the line of duty. So certainly he has a long police tradition in his family. That's one of the reasons he says he understands the psyche of the police department better than any other mayor.
Is there something personal going on in this book, too? You used to really admire Giuliani. As you say, he was the hero of your first book, City for Sale. Then you really felt betrayed by the way he handled himself as mayor and handled himself as a campaigner. You felt betrayed, I think, by his change of politics. So is there something personal between you and him?
Well, I wouldn't use the word betrayed. I don't think I'd use the word disappointed. I've been, you know, there's no question but that I've covered him, known him since 1979. I've been dismayed and disappointed by his race policies, by the ethics of this administration. I'm certainly a human being, and I approached him as a human being, and I write passionately about issues, and I think you see that in there. But I don't feel some deep personal animus towards him or anything like that.
You were pretty close to Giuliani for a while.
I was, yes.
Are you afraid to get close to people who are in politics now?
Well, you know, I was close to him when he was a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. I had many, many meals with him, many, many social moments with him while he was a federal prosecutor. I never had another meal with him the day he left the United States Attorney's Office. When he became a politician, I don't buddy up with politicians.
Wayne Barrett is the author of Rudy, an investigative biography of Rudolph Giuliani.